And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where we take weekly PGA Tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Tim Breon, Executive Vice President of TruSpec Golf, here with Jonathan Wall, Managing Editor for Equipment for Golf.com, and Andrew Tursky, Senior Equipment Editor for Golf.com as well. Fellas, post-US Open, a lot to talk about today. We're actually going to make it into a Bryson-only episode. I figure he deserves it with all the content that he's gotten on Fully Equipped before. So makes sense to do.
Don't we pretty much make all of our episodes like almost Bryson-only? I feel like
we usually have a weekly segment, but this is the entire episode.
Yeah.
It's true. We have a Bryson segment.
He earned it.
So what'd you think of the Winged Foot? What'd you think of the Open?
I'm a little biased as an East Coast guy, honestly. Okay. So I'm cheering for Winged Foot. I thought it was great. They made some adjustments after the first round where it looked like it might be getting away from them. Yeah. But the wind also helped too. Yeah. But I think it was great US Open.
Jay Wall?
Yeah. I mean, I was hoping for some real carnage.
There was a lot of carnage. Like, the second best score was even.
+4. Oh, I mean, I was hoping for a winner at like +5, +6. Yeah. I mean, something really stupid. But
they were saying +8 before the event, so they were setting me up to be like carnage.
Yeah.
Right.
I was waiting for it. But yeah, the golf course looked great. I think you always are hoping for a better finish. You know, there was a lot of the energy and excitement down the stretch was kind of knocked out when Matthew Wolff just kind of lost the plot a little bit. But, you know, hey, hats off to Bryson. He just absolutely ripped that golf course up. It didn't really matter. You know, the thing was, it really didn't matter where he hit the golf ball. And we always talk about that being the biggest defense at a US Open is the rough. And I mean, for him, it didn't matter at all.
You ever play Winged Foot West?
No, never have.
I'm sure you have, Tursky.
I have, yeah.
Well, you got one on Jay Wall.
There's a funny story there, but I'll tell it off camera.
So Winged Foot West, one of the things about it, which you'll attest to, Andrew, is that you don't have a lot of forced carries to get to the front. You do have areas. You have areas in front. Now, they have bunkers that look like they're fronting the green, but there's actually a good 30, 40-yard spacing between that cross bunker and in the front of the green.
Yeah, and I think his style of play, you know, the course really worked for that. Right. I don't know if that would necessarily work for all the U.S. Open setups.
No way. But so you do have some false fronts. The point I'm getting at is that if you hit it in the rough, you can play that front edge yardage and know that if you come up a little short of that, you're not going to stuff it in the lip of a bunker. You'll hit it onto the fringe and it'll still get onto the front of the green, or if it hits the front of the green, it'll get back to the hole. So I think that the bomb and gouge methodology is a little bit more set up for a golf course like that, where if you have a forced carry to the front of the green, if you come up a little short of that and you're playing the front yardage, you stuff it in the front lip of the bunker and you're in trouble.
It also felt like on Sunday that he was just hitting everything to 10 feet regardless.
Yeah, it didn't. I mean,
I don't think it really mattered where you put bunkers and rough. He was hitting it to 10 feet on every hole. So.
Yeah. And the other point to make note of here is Bryson wasn't the only one hitting at 360, 370. That Sunday pairing, I saw him play first a few times.
A lot of the times.
So, so everybody making this big deal about Bryson, you know, Matt Wolff and some of these younger kids that are coming up, they can hit it just as far.
Wolff is efficient too. Like sometimes Bryson will have higher ball speed, but Wolff will be, you know, 10 yards past them.
The flight dynamics are a little bit better, which, you know, later on in this episode, we're going to have a chat with Ben Showman from Cobra Puma. Obviously Ben has been every step of the way with Bryson and fixing the gear and getting the gear tuned in. And as we mentioned in just a little bit of that interview, you know, the flight dynamics that Bryson's seeing right now, he's hitting the ball astronomically high, which tells me that he could actually make it a little bit more efficient if he had less loft or slightly different characteristics. And I think that's what the guys over at CPG are looking into right now.
So. Less loft than five and a quarter.
Yeah. You look at less the long
loft,
drivers.
I'd say less loft than 5 1/4. So
the long drivers out there are using less loft. I mean, some of the long drivers go 1 degree loft in their driver. So if you're at the end of the day, the golf ball just knows speed and angle. So if he's delivering it the same way as a long driver, why wouldn't he be using a long driver head? So, and speaking of that, let's just dive into it. As we mentioned, you know, Bryson does so many cool, unique things with his gear. Everything's on the table, whether it's the golf ball. You know, my next question is when's he going to start talking about shoes? When's he going to start, you know, athlons with the long drive shoes? Is he going to start using long driver shoes here soon? Is he going to start looking at the golf glove here soon? But let's start off with driver, because you've heard of some interesting news coming out of their camp, J-Wall, when it comes to driver shaft length, I think, just in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think the most amazing thing about Bryson, and you know, I think we all kind of agree here, he to me is a lot like Tiger Woods, where he's all in when he figures out the process and what he's trying to accomplish. And Tiger was a lot like that whenever he was trying to change his swing. And, you know, it was like, you really never basked in the glory of a major. It was always kind of, okay, another one, on to the next one. And this is Bryson's first. And, you know, I'm sure for him, it's a really big deal, but I was amazed to hear him right as he's sitting in the media center after his win. One of the first things he mentions is, oh, by the way, I'm going to start testing a 48-inch driver shaft. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show you that the guy is very driven. And yes, it's a big deal that he won a major, but he now is trying to see if there's a way that he can widen that distance gap between him and everybody else, including the Rorys and the DJs of the world. You know, what can I do to get even longer and make the driver even more of an advantage? So yeah, that's his next thing that he's going to be doing is testing a 48-inch shaft. You know, Tim, you can speak to this because we've discussed, you know, driver shaft length pertaining to, you know, what's the tour average. And, you know, it's probably around 44 and a half, 45 out on the PGA Tour. You know, 48 inches, somebody might say, okay, what's the big deal? You're going to go up maybe 2.5 inches, maybe 3 inches in length. I mean, there's a lot going on with the geometry, you know, internally with the head and the shaft and how everything works and works along the axis. I mean, this is a major change for a guy, especially when you're talking about accuracy and how precise you're going to have to be if you're going to 48 inches.
Yep. 2 times pi radius squared, right? The longer we make the radius of that arc, we end up getting exponentially larger circumference of the circle, so to speak. And if the handle's moving at the same speed and the head is moving over a greater distance, that means it's moving faster. So when we talk about lengthening the driver, it's a play on trying to create a bigger arc so that the club head, you know, moves faster through that arc. You've got to be very careful on the build, you know, side of this. With long driver 48-inch shafts, right? They can't go to 70 and 80 gram shafts because at 48 inches, it's just way too heavy. The swing weights get astronomically high. And when you're talking about shafts that are that weight, that's typically what you need to be able to build the wall thicknesses thick enough to be stiff enough. So when you're talking about these long driver 48 inch shafts, it's a constant battle between keeping it light enough, but making it stiff enough. And so that's something that's going to be interesting to see play out, is how do they get to this 48-inch length without making it too heavy? But then the other part is because that lever is so much longer, when you're talking about how much the shaft is bending, you're getting a lot more lead deflection. So that we talked earlier about a 1-degree, 2-degree driver. Well, the shaft is bending forward so much that a long driver or somebody at that speed is actually turning it into a 9 or 10-degree lofted driver, because they're getting so much lead deflection or so much forward bending in the shaft. So I think that's something that's interesting to note.
Bryson doesn't like any deflection.
And he doesn't like exactly. He's trying to play the stiffest possible shafts that he can to cut down on any droop and deflection and maximum stability. Where I think they probably end up here, they probably end up with something that's very, very heavy in swing weight. You know, we know that he's played some very heavy swing weight clubs in his bag just over the last few months that are abnormally high as far as swing weight, and they're not necessarily matched for swing weighting through the set. So I don't think that really matters to him as much. What matters to him is to cut down on all the movement in the shaft, make it as stable as possible. Now, should the everyday golfer go out and try to do this? I wouldn't recommend it. They probably won't even get the ball airborne.
When are we going to do the test, by the way?
48-inch driver shaft?
Just reminded me. We never did that.
Let's do it. We'll do it in the next couple of weeks. I'll get a couple shafts in here to test.
Got to see what a normal person does with a driver like that.
Going from a 40. Well, I think we should test it at 44, 45, 46, 47, 48.
Let's do it. I love that.
Let's just test it all the way up. And the results vary. It's so player dependent. We've seen this on the PGA Tour. You know, as you mentioned, Jonathan, standard, or I shouldn't say standard, average lengths on driver to the end of the grip, so this is finished length, not cut length, has been between 44 and a half and 45 for a long time. Now we're seeing some guys go longer. Brooke Henderson out on the LPGA Tour, games a 48-inch shaft. Yeah.
But she chokes down a lot on the grip.
She does. But there are times when she goes all the way to the end of the grip. You know, not all the time. I'd say it's very rare. But
she's an LPGA winner, so it definitely
gaming a 48-inch shaft. So
has there been a PGA Tour player who's gone 48?
So Champions Tour player way back in the day gamed a 56-inch driver shaft before they stipulated that 48 inches was the maximum.
Mickelson tried 47 on the PGA Tour.
Yep, I remember that.
I remember that. And then Padraig Harrington went to 48 at one point.
Yep.
Okay. Of course, Padraig Harrington, course. The guy who yeah. will try everything. So, yeah, those are the two names that I can recall who have gone, you know, at least as far up as you can go.
I believe it was Rocky Thompson who tried that with 56-inch driver shaft. And
yes, he was Rocky Thompson.
Yep. He was in the top 10 in driving distance despite being, I don't know, he's probably 5'9", 5'10", 5'11". So, you know, it worked for him. And then you're also seeing, you know, then you got Ricky Fowler going 43 and a half. So I think we've got a lot of PGA Tour players that are throwing the regular length convention out the window.
An extra inch of length to his driver last week, 44 and a half now.
Oh, did he? So, yeah, there you go. Yeah. So, and then we've seen Tony go shorter last year. I think, you know, when Bryson starts gaming a 48-inch driver shaft, we're going to see some folks say, wait a minute, let me try that. I don't think it's going to work out for most folks because they don't have the face awareness and the ability to create maximum stability to be able to return the face to square and hit the ball out of the middle of the face. But, you know, all of this comes out of some of the research and findings we've mentioned, you know, many times on Fully Equipped about distance versus accuracy. The OEMs have actually found through their research that as long as you can pick up substantial distance, meaning 10 or 11 yards, it actually makes more sense to hit it further than straighter for your scoring average. So really interesting discussion. Next part of this, though, on the driver front, guys, is the loft. He's at 5.5. I know we've spoken to T.O. in the past, Tom Olsovsky from Cobra, and you know he's talking about a 3 or 4 degree driver, which once again, that's long drive driver. And we talk about a little bit that with Ben later on, but that'll be wild, won't it? 3 degree driver, 48-inch shaft on the PGA Tour week after week.
I just want to see what that looks like from a dress. So bad. Yes. 3 degree driver.
Which is significantly less lofted than his putter.
Yeah.
Right? So arm lock
putting. I just want to see this driver in competition. Like, and we're still very early days. I mean, they're still trying to figure out what this build's going to look like. Bryson has yet to test it. They're just talking about it, trying to get things in play. But I just want to see him use it.
Yeah, it's going to be in the bag at the Masters. I guarantee it. I'm on record now. It's in the bag at the Masters.
Listen, if they prototype something and he hits it good, he's putting it in. We already know that about him, right? If they prototype something that's conforming and he hits a couple shots and likes it, he doesn't hesitate putting it in right away, does he?
Which I respect.
So let me ask you this. Here, what his bag setup would look like: a 3 degree driver, his standard 5.25, and then he'd have his 2 wood at like 11.5.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that? I mean, that would totally blow Phil Mickelson's
basically a
2 driver
setup.
Three driver
setup,
pretty much.
All less than 11 degrees.
It's wild.
And that's the loft that DJ plays, 11 degrees for his driver.
Yeah. So. You know, very interesting. As you just mentioned in Fairway Woods, he's playing a 3 wood that's not really a 3 wood. Let's call it what it is. It's really kind of
a
mini driver. Yeah, it's a 2 wood. And then for a 5 wood, he's basically playing a 3 wood. So, it's all through the bag, you know, when you start to look at what's going on. One of the things that gets, you know, for his gear, guys, that doesn't really get talked about a lot. Everybody's talking about, you know, the shafts and unilength. Jumbo Max grips. This is a huge difference from what most people play.
I don't think people understand how big these grips are.
They're
like triple. They're like triple the size.
Yeah, they're like the handle of a baseball bat.
Yeah,
you know, which playing into the interview later with Ben makes a lot of sense now. They're so big. What does that do to a golf swing? The larger you make the grip, typically the rate of closure goes down through the swing. So how quickly the face closes.
Personally, I can't really see much at all.
Yeah. So rate of closure goes down, which causes the face to stay more open. It also cuts down a little bit on the variation of rate of closure. So if you take 10 swings and you look at your deviation on rate of closure, the larger the grip, it'll tend to be a little more consistent with a lot of players that are tested. So once again, going back to Bryson, it's not a feel thing. It's a stability thing. You go back to Mo Norman. Mo Norman used Jumbo Max grips. You know, the natural golf philosophy of high handle at address and maximum stability through the swing. You know, there's a lot of similarities there to what Mo was trying to do in his golf swing and what Bryson does throughout his golf swing, as Ben later on will mention as well. So the grips are very foreign. And when you're putting a Jumbo Max grip on a golf club, like, don't take your driver, bring it to a repair store, have them throw a Jumbo Max grip on there and expect it to feel anywhere near the same, because from a swing weight standpoint, these Jumbo Max grips are extremely heavy. So that's going to kill your swing weight. And for folks that are very sensitive to swing weight, meaning feeling the end of the club and where it is when they're swinging it, it's going to be an extremely different feel. So once again, if you want to explore Jumbo Max, you probably need to build a test club to be able to do it the right way. But then when you get into the irons, we're going one length. We're going game improvement long irons. I mean, it's pretty wild. For you, Andrew, what's the one thing he's doing in his gear that you're like, that's just crazy?
Well, it's single length irons. Like, okay. No one else in the world really does that.
Yeah.
I think on tour, what was it, like 1980, the last time anyone even tried it?
Tommy Armour had a set of mostly single length irons out. They were very, very similar. They weren't exactly single length, but they were close.
Yeah, and I've tested a set of Sterling single length irons, and it's just so different, especially when you get down to like a pitching wedge. And I didn't even try a 60 degree, 37.5.
That's the most wild thing to me about single length, is the idea of a wedge or a lob wedge or a sand wedge at 37.5 inches and 66 degree lie angle. That to me is wild.
Like, yeah, you would pick that club players. Up and.
Hit, you know, it fat and dead left.
Yeah.
Most people would shove the face in the ground before the ball.
Absolutely.
Or they'd hit it dead left. And if they did hit it online and solid, it would go so high because of the extra speed they were generating with that wedge that the ball would go so high that they couldn't control their distance.
But it did, from a mindset, it simplifies it, because you're kind of just thinking about, okay, 7 iron on each swing.
Yep. It makes, from a theoretical standpoint, it makes sense. Now, what I see out of single length with the average player is that they have a really difficult time handling the 4 and 5 iron, specifically not because they can't hit it consistently. They do. So they hit it very consistently, but they can't hit it high enough and they can't hold greens.
Yeah.
So they can't generate enough speed to be able to create enough lift and stopping power.
You really got to get that CG low if you're going to try this out.
Yep.
If you're going to Frankenstein up some long irons with a 4 and a 5, maybe a bunch of lead tape, you know, if you have access to someone who's going to drill in some tungsten.
We've
or something
had
like
this.
That.
Yeah, we had somebody ask us to make a set of PXGs in a single length, and we said, you know, at True Spec, and we were like, you're going to ruin these golf clubs. If you try to take a set of conventional length discriminant length clubs, or incremental length is what the word I was looking for, incremental length clubs, and make them into single length, you're going to have to remove weight from the pitching wedge and 9 iron, most likely. So you're going to have to bore somewhere in those heads. That's going to change the CG of the club potentially, which could ruin it. And then in the 4 iron and 5 iron, you're going to have to add a ton of weight. So wherever you add that weight, the bottom line is after you make that conversion from a incremental length into a single length iron, and by modifying those heads, those heads are toast. You're never going back to an incremental length build ever again on those heads. You can't get the weight back for the most part. So
use an old set if you're doing it.
Yeah, if you want to try it with an old set, because if you try it with your gamer set, you're probably not going to end up with a good result. And then on the good player side of the equation with one length, what I've seen a lot of is what we mentioned earlier. Slightly heavy shots, more than anything, left shots, and then the inability to control distances. So it doesn't mean that one length doesn't work. The folks over at Cobra they've gained some tremendous traction in the one length product. And there are some players that rave about what it's done for their golf game. But bottom line is give it a shot, but make sure that you're giving it a shot designed the way it's supposed to be designed. Don't just take something that's designed one way and then try to retrofit it into unilength, because it probably isn't going to work.
It's definitely not going to work.
Yeah. For you, Jay Wall, what's the thing in his game with his gear that just blows you away?
That, you know, a lot of the clubs, if you look throughout the bag, I mean, a lot of those things are Frankenstein, I would say, to some extent. But he has artisan wedges. Such a classic wedge.
Traditional.
You know, it's like of all the clubs, you know, it's like his wedges are very traditional in the shaping. And, you know, I know that Bryson's talked about in the past trying to find wedges that didn't spin as much, you know, trying to find something with a little bit duller groove. He's used PXG wedges. Kobus tried to make up some stuff. And now he's using the artisan. But, yeah, shout out Mike T. You know, that's Tiger's guy. And yeah, it's those artisan wedges, but it's the fact that he, you know, not just uses those, but he's using a 50 at 47 and a 55 at 52, 60 at 58. You know, we've talked about in the past, you really don't want to manipulate the loft on wedges too much, you know, but Bryson's strengthening, you know, 50 to 47 and a 55 to 52 degrees. So, very traditional, but I would love to kind of get the nitty gritty on how they were able to make sure that sole goes through the turf correctly. Cause that's one of the things that can happen when you try and strengthen or weaken a club, is you're altering that bounce on the club and how it's attacking the ground. So, maybe it is kind of Frankenstein. I don't know.
For me, it kind of plays off of what you just mentioned there, Jay Wall, and that is, you know, from the Frankenstein aspect, it's not so much the club itself, it's kind of just the philosophy through the bag of, I don't care what it looks like and feels like.
Yeah.
For me, that's
completely open mind.
I don't care what it looks like and feels like. I want it to hit the numbers I want it to hit from a performance standpoint, and I want something that's max stability, that's going to give me max, you know, whatever I'm looking for, like in the long irons, forgiveness, whatever. That's unbelievably atypical of tour players. You know, I think that's shifted over the last 10 to 15 years, where they're more open-minded to something that may not check all the boxes from an aesthetic feel, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint. But to be completely open-minded and play basically game improvement golf clubs, that's so different than most tour players. And in the past, you would give a tour player a game improvement golf club and the performance metrics would be amazing, but they could never take ownership of it. They couldn't look down at it. And so to me, that's actually wonderful that you've got somebody out on the PGA Tour that really doesn't care what it looks like anymore.
And there's like no ego in it. He'll just try anything.
Try anything. So for me, that's where it's at. You know, I do have to mention, you know, we've heard about some of the stuff on the golf ball with finding the rotational aspects of the golf ball and the stability of the ball. That's pretty wild. Obviously the putter, arm lock itself is not all that, you know, is not all that unconventional, I would say. You know, Kuchar and a few other folks kind of went down that road quite a while ago. Now when you're talking about the putter shaft, that's extremely unconventional to have something that's that stiff. Obviously the tip diameter on that shaft, it looks really funky. You know, when I was watching this weekend, watching him putt with that putter with that really thick outside diameter on the tip of that putter shaft, it just looks really, really, really different. But for me, I think it's just the overall philosophy that I don't care what it looks and feels like. I just want it to perform. And from a club fitter's perspective, that's music to my ears.
Yeah.
Because it allows me to open up the toolbox. You know, when I open up a head of 45 different iron heads for somebody to try, but their biases really kind of corner them into a cul-de-sac of three or four options, how much can I move the needle? You're taking half my tools away from me.
Yeah, you're pretty stuck in that circumstance.
So, you know, for all of you average golfers out there that are listening, throw those preconceived ideas and those biases and those preferences, throw them out the window. Don't be afraid to try a lot of different ideas and see what works for you to help you hit the ball better and enjoy the game more.
It's fun to experiment too. Just go out and
sure
have some fun.
When you're doing it, don't Frankenstein the club. Make sure it's built correctly for whatever club you're testing. So get an old set of irons, take the 7-iron over to a club builder and say, hey, I really want this thing to play like X, Y, and Z. I want to give this a shot. Do what you got to do to it. You know, And then that way you don't have to be on the hook for necessarily a new experimental club where you're having to pay new club pricing on it, but you've got something you can mess around with and play around with and see if it works for you.
There's going to be club builders across the world trying to do Bryson builds, and they've probably never done it before.
Exactly right.
Good luck.
Good luck.
But
better you than me.
So, you know, this week, instead of, you know, a gear spotlight in traditional format, as I mentioned, it's kind of a Bryson-only episode. We were able to spend some time with Ben Showman from Cobra Puma Golf, who's Cobra Puma's tour rep. We were able to get our mailbag instead of our traditional format where the people are asking us questions. We were able to direct that question over to Ben. So with that, I think it's great to get into the interview. This is a good one, folks. If you have any interest in what Bryson's doing in his gear, this is 30 minutes you're not going to want to miss. So with that, let's get the interview going.
Well, if you hadn't heard, Bryson DeChambeau is your 2020 U.S. Open champion. And I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you have a lot of questions about Bryson's gear. And in my opinion, there's nobody better to talk to about Bryson's gear than Cobra Tour rep Ben Showman. Ben, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us.
How are you, Jonathan? Doing good. Thanks, man.
Well, let's kick things off by asking you to go back to the first time that you worked with Bryson. What do you recall what that was like, and how has your working relationship evolved over the years?
I remember the first interaction quite vividly. Met on a range here in Carlsbad, and he was hitting balls, shockingly enough. He'd already was ripping through a giant basket. And, you know, that's just kind of in the recruiting phase, is, you know, what we had going on. And I mean, I had, just like everyone else at the time, I mean, I had 1,000 questions, lined up, and, you know, it was, obviously they're the interactions, just talking, you know, meeting someone for the first time, but it immediately started going into golf and deep into golf. And, you know, one of my very first questions for him was, why do you play with the big grips? And, you know, that's a question that a lot of people have. And he actually has quite a simple answer, which I wasn't really prepared for such a simple answer. But he said, how many racket sports are played with tiny grips like that are on a golf club? And I had to kind of back up and start thinking about it. And clearly you think about it and you're like, yeah, really, there is nothing other than a fly swatter. What has a handle on it that tiny? So, you know, that kind of kicked it off. I was like, all right, you know, this guy's thought process is definitely different than mine. And, you know, we've got a great relationship. I mean, it's not always perfect. There's plenty of kicking and screaming and, you know, we're usually on the same tracks somewhere, but we're not always on the same train. So, he's been a challenge to say the least, you know, when it comes to innovation and designing golf clubs.
How much better of a club fitter and gear guy have you become working with him, Ben?
Great question, Tim. Personally, I think I've become exponentially better just because it's forced me to, you know, learn in a lot greater detail other facets of basically the design process and the engineering process. Fortunately, I understand physics very well. I'm not great at math, calculus, algebra, trig, definitely not my strong point. Geometry and understanding the physics of, you know, what goes into design and basically, you know, the if we do this, this will happen. Those scenarios, those are things I've become very proficient at over the years. And fortunately, we have a great team of engineers that I work extremely closely with. And I've gotten much, much closer with them over the last few years. You know, even though what department pays me at Cobra Puma, it's marketing, but I spend the majority of my time in research and development and R&D and a lot of time with our engineering team and, you know, asking a lot of questions, and and just trying to be as involved in as I can and trying to learn more and more. And it's, he's really forced me to learn a lot more and become definitely more proficient at what I do.
Yeah. I figured working with somebody like Bryson would open up your mind to a lot of ideas that maybe you didn't have prior to. You know, we've heard a lot about what he's done over the last 18 months with gaining weight and time in the gym and trying to hit the ball farther. I think the average listener out there doesn't realize that this has been in the works for quite some time, though, longer than just this year. When did you first start to have discussions with him about, man, I think I want to hit it further? And in those discussions, what did he cite as kind of the reason for why that he wanted to go down this road? Because this is very unconventional, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is and it isn't. You know, I think I would probably argue that it's not exactly conventional, but just looking at the golf landscape, say in the last 5 years, it definitely fits in. I don't think it's that much of an anomaly. But, you know, we go back to right when we first started working with him. Obviously, he was an amateur and then, you know, turned pro right after the Masters. And, you know, he always hit the ball far, you know, even for his size at the time. You look at him now 4 years ago and, you know, he looks like he's 12 years old body frame size wise, but he's always been fairly broad shouldered. You know, he's 6'1", so he's got a pretty big swing arc. He's always been pretty strong. So he's definitely hit it far from the beginning, but I think over the course of those years, I think he saw the advantage that was there to try to hit it further. The quest to hit it farther isn't something that's just come about in the last 8 to 12 months. It's been on his mind and probably pretty forward on his mind this whole time. I think developing a plan on how to do it and how to go about doing it and where am I going to get this speed from? I think it just took some time to really put all that together. And obviously there's a lot of talk in the last few days about how Bryson and Chris Gomo put together a plan to do it in case it didn't exactly work out. But the effort and the time that he puts in and that, you know, we all put in around him, I mean, it's almost like it can't fail or couldn't fail.
At what point did he start talking about gaining weight in order to gain distance? And as part of someone like on his team, were you guys trying to talk him out of it at all?
No, not at all. As far as the gaining weight thing, gosh, I want to say he probably started talking about that at least 2 years ago, you know, so it's not really that new. Again, I think it goes back to the plan and how exactly am I going to attain that and what's the healthiest way to do that. And, you know, obviously what short off season that he had last year, I guess pretty much like maybe the month of October was kind of his off season. There was about a 4 or 5 week period where he was in Bahamas, did a bunch of work. And then really this, you know, this quarantine worked very advantageously for him, because to be able to travel and work out that hard and to be able to eat enough to do all that is almost impossible to do that on a tour schedule, you know, and even if you're playing say 2 or 3 weeks in a row, that still becomes extremely difficult to try to make all those things happen, especially as the weather gets really hot. And, you know, I mean, you're burning a lot of calories just being out on the golf course and to try to eat enough to maintain. So, I think this break obviously really helped him and helped him focus, because he couldn't go to the golf course every day. So he needed an outlet to do something. And, you know, a lot of his gym work really took place then.
So I know you and I were talking here recently, you know, for people who don't realize, Bryson changed drivers during the final round. And I think that might have thrown, you know, the average recreational golfer for a bit of a loop, you know, the thought of a pro changing drivers before the final round of a major championship. But as you mentioned to me, this is pretty common for Bryson. He's a bit like a baseball player where he plays the hot hand. So if maybe a driver's not working, he's totally fine, you know, trying another one out. Do you, or have you known anybody before out on tour who's ever employed such a tactic? And has Bryson been doing this since he started at Cobra, where he's just totally fine changing drivers out if one just doesn't seem to be working for him?
Yeah. So of all the, you know, all the things that he may do that, that appear to be different and maybe not the norm amongst his peers, I honestly find that to probably be the most unusual thing, as far as like what he does with driver. And, you know, we talked about that yesterday, that he has 3, 4, and even sometimes 5 drivers on deck. And it's more of a rotation than it is having an absolute gamer, having the perfect backup, and then maybe, you know, one more backup in there. I mean, he just rotates them. And that is very uncommon. I mean, that's uncommon for, obviously, guys like us. It's super uncommon, unless, you know, you're the gear junkie who just brings a new driver to the range or the golf course every time. But to have, you know, one brand and one loft and, you know, the same shaft, and then to continually rotate them, I mean, that's completely unheard of. You know, most guys have their gamer that they're comfortable with. They hopefully have at least one backup that they're comfortable with. And that's, you know, kind of status quo. That's pretty normal amongst players on the PGA Tour. So to literally play Thursday and Friday with one driver and then put another one in on Saturday and then maybe another different one in on Sunday, you know, that's not very common. That's not very common on tour.
Kind of figured.
But, you know, to him, you know, they're all very similar. It's not like there's a big change in loft. Everything is 5.25 to maybe 5.75 degrees of loft. The shaft remains the same, and really the overall head weights don't change. And it's, I think it's just to him, it's more of an appearance. And like you said, with, it's like with a baseball bat, what one feels hot and what one's just feeling, happens to feel really good, you know, at that, on that day, on that week.
You know, when you look at some of the things he does throughout the bag, whether it be the ball, the putter, all the way through the bag, he's thinking outside the box. How often, you know, with professional athletics, a lot of different sports are kind of copycat. When somebody's doing well, everybody wants to know what they're doing. How much copycatting is going on where guys are walking up to you, other players are walking up saying, hey, what are you guys doing? And are they trying to test stuff similar to see if it maybe works for them?
I would say the putter is probably the most often asked piece of equipment, you know, since he started doing the arm lock. I'd say that one's probably the one that's translated the most, where I have other guys just, you know, and even though it's not a Cobra putter, it's a sick putter, you know, players will come up to me and ask, you know, about getting one. The other forms, you know, I guess there's been a lot of guys over the last few years, trier drivers. And I don't exactly think that's completely Bryson driven. I think that's just more my relationship with players. The one thing that does happen on a fairly regular basis is someone will come on the range and grab like his pitching wedge and try to hit it. And
37 and a half inch pitching wedge.
Right. So there's usually, you know, some awkward swings at first and a few giggles that ensue, but you know, I don't have anybody busting the door down of our tour truck asking for a set of his irons yet. I'm definitely not ruling it out. I just think at, you know, at that point, at that level, I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of, there's going to be a lot of inquiries into the single length.
Right.
I have from the LPGA side, about a couple actually girls that play in the LPGA that have inquired and tried. But yeah, I don't think, no one's asking for a lob wedge at 37 and a half inches long. So the other equipment, you know, his driver's fairly standard in length, his 3-wood, his 5-wood that he uses. So, you know, I'll definitely get asked for those things, but those aren't really out of the norm.
Lie angle spec on those irons is 72 degrees on lie angle. Is that right?
No. So they've fluctuated a lot over the years. He's currently at 66 degrees.
So that's a lot flatter than I had thought. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a lot flatter than where he's been. So there was a point in time where they did go up as high as 72. And for your listeners, to give you an idea, most putter lie angles generally reside around 71.
Yep.
So 72 degrees is very, very upright. I mean, it literally looks like you have a chance to hit your left ankle if you're right-handed.
Well, if you gave a 72-degree lie-angle iron, let's say a 6-iron, to the average tour player, how far left would they hit that? I mean, it'd probably take off close to their left ear.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to aim really far right, to say the least. So it has come down. You know, it hovered around 70 for a long time, and then we just kind of slowly brought it down. I want to say we've been pretty steady at 66 since probably the first of this year. And I think some of that has to do with he is swinging, obviously, faster and harder. I think having a little bit more knee flex allows him to use his lower body more efficiently during the swing for power. As we all know, that's obviously our main source of our power. And I think that's, you know, the big reason why he's come down. But, I mean, week to week, they can fluctuate. Literally, in Chicago, I think we went up a degree. We actually went weaker in loft by a degree. In Atlanta, we went right back down, back to 66 and right back to his normal loft. So that's usually something that's done almost weekly with him, where he's testing spin rates, lie angles, and then how that loft figures into that spin rate equation. So, yeah, we've been pretty steady at that lie angle. I don't foresee him going anywhere, you know, north of 68 degrees anytime soon, just based on the way he's swinging now.
When it comes to his irons, it's not just the lie angle that's different, but, you know, you're prototyping and really making him custom one-offs. Can you kind of talk about that process and how long it actually takes to make one iron head for Bryson?
Well, you know, in the early stages, when we signed him, you know, we knew from an engineering standpoint, essentially what would definitely help. Like, obviously you look at the set of irons, the 4 and 5 in particular, obviously being substantially shorter. And a lot of players have a hard time getting those airborne, period. So, you know, what would work? And I made a lot of random prototypes just in the shop late at night, welding basically soles to make them wider and on the MB and CB irons to see if that was something that was feasible and would work. And, you know, taking a sole that was maybe half to 3/4 of an inch wide and making it 1.5 inches wide, you know, to try to see if we can lower the CG and make it easier to get balls airborne. And so made a lot of crazy stuff there for probably a good year. But, you know, we've evolved all the way to now where, and sorry, Andrew, like some of those heads would take like a day between welding and grinding and shaping. And so there was a lot of effort that went into it. But, you know, it was one of those things where you sit in a meeting and R&D is like, okay, we can hustle this up, but it might be 4 weeks, it might be 6 weeks, it might be 8 weeks. And Bryson's impatient, to say the least. And, you know, so am I when it comes to something like that. So it's like, wait a minute, I can just go out and, you know, put a welding helmet on and I can actually get something that will give us an idea anyways from a launch and spin characteristic and ball flight standpoint to see if this will actually work long-term. And we evolved to where we're at today. And he actually plays with the one length SZ 4 and 5 iron. So the same exact one that you guys could order or buy off a shelf this afternoon. It's literally the same exact head. So I think it's cool to see that evolution into where, you know, we've went to with those golf clubs and the fact that he plays with essentially stock golf clubs.
What's the wildest Bryson creation that's never seen the light of day?
Ooh, gosh, that's a curveball. Cause usually they all end up seeing the light of day, regardless of how crazy or ugly they happen to look. Bryson doesn't care how they look. I, on the other hand, do. So I still want them to try to look like a conventional golf club. I built some lob wedges, a year or two ago that were rounded off in the back because I added like 25 or 30 grams of weld bead and shaped it. And basically gave this really bulbous heel, and I actually have a patent on it. So I haven't given up on it, but it is an odd looking duck. I'm trying to think. I know we definitely have some pieces in archive, and we're trying to do a better job of archiving just all the kind of goofy things we've made over the years, and get some pictures up online and just kind of show everyone, you know, some of the crazy stuff that's been built.
Need to get on that, Ben. What did Alien make? Alien Wedge, $250 million.
It was a lot of money when we looked it up. Yeah.
Did they really?
Yeah, 250, 300 yeah. million, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess all the laughs. Snickering, like, who's the sucker? It's this guy sitting right here.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Someone's got a house on the beach somewhere.
So, you know, looking at where the gear's going, we've heard some discussion about a 48-inch, you know, testing out some 48-inch shafts. I've, from speaking with T.O. in the past, you know, trying some even lower lofted driver heads potentially. You know, looking at his launch characteristics, I believe his peak heights are like over 150 feet on driver right now, which is pretty darn high. Is that accurate? Or, and so going to those lower lofts, you know, you were kind of looking at a driver that's set up like a long drive driver at this point. One question I would have is that with long drivers, they tend to beat the bulge and roll flat after a few strikes. Is that at all a concern from the team as you start to evolve into one of these heads that's designed to withstand 140 mile an hour club head speed?
Yeah. So, I guess I have a couple different answers for that, Tim. Fortunately, quite a few years ago now, but I was fortunate enough to manage our long drive team on the Cobra side. And I did that for, I don't know, about 7-8 years maybe, and had a chance to work with and help some guys achieve some world long drive championships. Jason Zubek being one of them, is still a very good friend of mine. Jamie Sadlowski, just to name a couple of the guys that, you know, I worked with. And Jason and I actually trade text almost every day still. And a lot of it now revolves around what Bryson's doing, how he's achieved it. Jason is very cerebral when it comes to the golf swing and knowing and understanding the golf swing and the physics of the golf club. So it's definitely something we talk about a lot. To answer the question about, can you beat the bulge and roll out of it? Yes, you definitely can. So I think there was a period of, I don't know how many years, let's call it 4 or 5. We made a driver in the, say it's 05, 6, 7 maybe. It was called the Speed Pro LD. And that head won multiple long drive championships. And we put a lot of work, myself and another engineer at the time, his name is Josh Breyer. We put a lot of work into dialing in the face thickness for the face insert and what we were making it out of, the thicknesses. And one of the reasons that became such a successful part was its durability. So, I mean, there's guys that still have them to this day that beat them. Wow. Like crazy. So there is a way to make them more durable. Typically that comes with added weight to that overall head, which, you know, isn't the greatest thing. We were able to keep the weight down on it, but, and then as far as all that, how that translates to Bryson, we have had some pretty good success with this SC driver that he's playing with now, this low lofted driver. Part of that is, again, trying to engineer the proper thickness of the face, so we can get some decent CT numbers out of it as far as face flex and speed. Right. But, you know, also being able to get some reliability into it, that it's not going to flatten and, you know, change the bulge and roll characteristics. Obviously, that's just from a confidence standpoint. You know, if you have something that's really only going to be good for a few tournaments, it's probably not going to be the best for your psyche. Bryson, again, being a little different, we could probably just rotate that out. But at the end of the day, I think from a feel and ball flight standpoint, it's something we really want to, we do want to design some longevity into it and some durability for sure.
So I have to imagine that he draws on some of that long drive experience and maybe picks your brain about working with some of those long drive athletes, especially considering that's the direction he's kind of heading with driver.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he has a little bit. I would say it's more me sharing that with him. You know, just as far as just from testing and even from, like, to say a club delivery standpoint. And, you know, now, like you said, he is, you know, talking about 48 inch drivers. I know this may sound shocking to you, but we literally had an hour long conversation yesterday where about 10 minutes of it was talking about how much fun he had this last weekend winning the US Open. And the remainder of the 45 minutes was talking about what we're going to do with, you know, going longer and what we need to do with experimenting and what needs to be done. So obviously there are some inherent differences. If we're going to add, say, 2 inches to his driver, the lie angle is going to change substantially. The shaft that he's currently playing, which we have some LAGP shafts that Jeff Meyer did make longer for us. So we can do this, because this is something that's been in the works for a while. But just becoming accustomed to it and, you know, adding 2 inches to your driver sounds fairly easy, but actually executing it and changing things obviously are going to be a longer road to go down. And I think he knows that. We talked about it this morning again. He knows there's going to be a lot of trial and error and trying to make it all work. And do we need to change the bulge and roll on the face? You know, the loft is obviously a concern. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's playing at 5.5 now, the laws of physics say if we add another 1.5 inches or 2 inches, he's probably going to need less loft. So that's something else that we're working on as well.
There's been a lot of doubt about Bryson's wedge play the last couple of years, especially as he's gained distance. And I know he's changed wedges a bunch in recent years. In your opinion, what's been like the main struggle that he's had with his wedges and figuring those out?
I've always went back to the same thing, and it's just length. You know, I think there could be some groove patterns that may be a little bit more advantageous. Obviously, we're very restricted when it comes to groove size, groove depth, the overall limitations on grooves. You know, the USGA also has a limitation on face roughness, which is very, very minimal. And, you know, face roughness actually can have just as big, if not a bigger impact on golf ball spin, which is why they're so strict when it comes to that. But all those factors, I mean, it's a fairly simple physics problem. I mean, you're talking about having a longer lever, and let's use a lob wedge, for example. It's 2.5 inches longer than what we would consider a standard lob wedge. So that lever being that much longer, and then you have, say, 58 or 59 or 60 degrees aloft, you're able to swing it faster. It's just harder for the ball to stay lower on the face longer, right? Yeah. So, you know, in a simple analogy is going from a square groove to now the modified U groove that's being used now. You know, box grooves just kept the ball lower on the face longer, which is why we were able to spin them so well. So that's really the biggest thing, you know. And for Bryson, it's not that I haven't put those in his face. I mean, trust me, we went way down the road with wedges, and we've tested a lot of different things, including length. For him, it's more his setup and his delivery that he's doesn't really want to change the length, you know. So he has obviously a system with that length of iron, all the irons, the wedges. And for him, I think it's just more of a setup and a swing delivery that makes it more of a challenge. But honestly, that's, to me, that's always going to be the biggest challenge. So some of the things that he's worked on to get better is just have a little more shaft lean at impact. The best wedgers in the world all have some shaft lean at impact, which allows him to, you know, to impart a lot of spin on the golf ball. So it's definitely something that he knows he needs to work on, especially now that he has a lot more wedges in his hands around the greens.
Since you work so closely with Bryson, have you ever found yourself implementing any of his thoughts about the swing or about golf clubs into your own game?
Yeah, I mean, you know, early on, I definitely was very intrigued with the one length and where I fit in. Unfortunately, I don't get to play much golf. Obviously travel a lot. I have two young kids. So I try to, you know, I do try to spend some time on the range. I do love hitting golf balls. So I test a lot of things out and trying to find out where I fit in the one length. I typically tend to hit a 4-iron more squarely than I do an 8-iron. So at the end of the day, my 4, 5, and 6 were all one length. All discrete length. So all variable length. And then 7 on down to pitch actually were the one length. And that's where I felt the most comfortable. Were actually longer short clubs and longer lower lofted clubs. That just happened to be what I felt comfortable with. The grips I've given a try, I can't make the grips work. Which is ironic. I mean, I don't have small hands. I typically wear a large glove. So I don't have small hands by any means, but I keep going smaller and smaller in grips. So I'm actually going the other way.
Interesting. You know, I think the one of the main values that I think all of our listeners have in listening to Fully Equipped is we take tour news and we break it down for the everyday golfer. So through that lens, Ben, what do you think the average golfer can learn from what Bryson has done with his equipment? Is there a lot of pertinence to what he's doing? Should people explore some of these one length options and long driver shafts and stiff shafts, and or what can they learn from what Bryson does with his equipment?
I think first and foremost, I think the biggest takeaway is that you don't have to try to fit in. You know, you don't have to do what everyone else is doing. You know, there are things in it, even though his swing is a little different, his single plane, there's a lot of things in his golf swing that are very similar to anyone else, any of his playing peers. I think when it comes to, if you have an idea, if you feel comfortable with something, try it, you know, just because you may be heckled by your golf buddies doesn't mean that it's not a good idea. You know, I mean, Bryson continues to say it too, when he's interviewed about that, and like what Arnie was saying, swing your swing. And right. I think that translates to further than just, you know, it's okay to have a different swing, but it's also okay to use different golf clubs. You know, there's so many options available now. Use things that work for you. I think that's super important. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways, is that there are different ways to go about doing this, and you shouldn't be embarrassed, and you should give it a try, especially if you're a gear junkie. Like, try it out before you naysay it. You know, just because it doesn't work for you doesn't mean it won't work for someone else.
So normally we have a mailbag question where we answer a listener or a social media question. But since we've got you on the pod today, I figure we actually had a bunch of people ask questions about Bryson's gear, and I thought this one was pretty good. Somebody wanted to know, why does Bryson play game improvement irons in the 4 and the 5? I know it's the Cobra King speed zone one length. He wants to know, what's the play advantage? Higher length, lighter? What's the reason?
So weight wise, no. Basically his 4-iron, 5 all the way down to his pitching wedge are all about 270 grams. And he plays with that head. Number of reasons, it obviously has a wider sole. It does have a little more offset to it. So those things all inherently help. And a low center of gravity, all those things help launch the ball higher. It's also definitely got a fair amount of perimeter weighting, which helps with miss hits and maintaining ball speed. So he plays with that 4 and 5 iron for the same reason that most of us need to play with something generally a little bigger than a 4 and 5 iron.
Great answer.
Which, I think is pretty cool. A lot of better players, regardless if they're on the PGA Tour or they're the club champion at your golf course, at your home course, you know, there's a lot of players that can benefit from a little game improvement.
See, Tursky, you need a hybrid.
Yeah, I know, let's say.
What's that?
There's a running joke. There's a running joke on the pod where Tursky, Andrew here, did not have favorable comments about hybrids. And I said, listen, pal, you may end up in one here soon. So
I tend to overhook the ball. So,
yeah.
Oh, well, awesome. Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, that's hybrids. I mean, hybrids aren't for everyone. And that's usually the, that they're not for everyone. And there are players that just, they can't make them go anywhere but left.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not just low handicap. It's kind of
thirsty.
I think that's why Five Woods have made, you know, somewhat of a comeback in the last few years. And in our business, I definitely helped pioneer bringing back a Five Wood that was kind of playing more like a hybrid, like from a length standpoint. I love the length idea, but maybe just not always the result in a standard hybrid.
I love the speed zone five wood. I find a lot of the elite players that we work with at TruSpec, when they're looking for that anti-left but very forgiving product that hits that 230, 240 number, you put that speed zone five wood in their hands and they absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's definitely a very useful club, especially at a shorter length.
Right. Shorter than even the regular standards.
Yeah. I mean, if the regular standards say 42.5 or 42, I mean, I love 41.5. Yeah. I mean, Bryson's five wood is 41 inches long. Ricky Fowler's five wood is 40 and a half.
Right. So for all you folks that are listening out there, don't go out and just chop down your five wood based on our comments. Because if you do, the build is going to be compromised. The swing weight's going to go down. It's not going to play the same. So if you do want to try a short five wood, make sure you go to a club builder that knows what they're doing to build it so it feels right.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it's going to make the club real light from a swing weight standpoint, but you're also going to make the shaft. I mean, depending on the shaft, obviously, but you could make it quite a bit stiffer too, and all those things maybe not advantageous for you.
For those who just watched Bryson win the U.S. Open and, you know, maybe they want to go try a swing or switch their swing up, when Bryson talks about his swing, he tends to throw around big words such as ulnar deviation, and most people just don't know what that means. In layman's terms, how would you describe what Bryson tries to do with his swing?
Layman terms. Oof. That's a good one. I definitely will not try to throw out max ulnar deviation. You know, when I think about his swing, I usually revert back to Mo Norman and what Mo was doing and trying to do. And there's a lot of similarities between the two with, like, how they deliver it. And, you know, I mean, Bryson's swing isn't – I mean, it's obviously very unique when it comes to golf, but it's not like a swing that can't be copied. You know, he's very much the golf machine, right? So – there's a lot of incorporations in his swing that come from the Golf Machine book. And right, correct me if I'm wrong, but the premise of that book, of Homer's book, was basically like, you know, here's a bunch of different variations, put together the numbers that fit you and make sense to you. And honestly, Andrew, I don't think that's not for everyone. I mean, if you've tried to read the book, I mean, I've read bits and pieces of it because I literally can't read the whole book cover to cover. I just wanted to get a good understanding of what he was trying to do, and the ideas behind it. So, you know, can someone go out and swing like Bryson? Absolutely. Is it going to take some time? Yes. You know, making tweaks to your golf swing is never easy. And making a wholesale change would be a challenge. But I mean, there's definitely components that may work well for someone, and I think that's what's cool about making changes to your swing. You don't typically want to make a wholesale change. You want to change maybe a component of the swing. Maybe it's your takeaway. Maybe it's your transition into your downswing. Maybe it's your follow through. Whatever that happens to be.
Awesome, Ben. Always appreciate the insight into Bryson's gear. Thanks for the time.
You got it, boys. Good chat.
Thanks, Ben.
And that'll do it for episode 60 of Fully Equipped. Thanks again to Ben Shulman for the time. If you want to check us out on social media for more gear content, We're at @fully_equipped on Twitter and @fullyequippedgolf on Instagram. Thanks as always for listening. We'll see you around.